Hello, everyone. This is Robin with 7 Questions. Heads up, this episode features some strong language, so listener discretion is advised. Now, on with the show. Welcome to 7 Questions, a Hear Your Story podcast using 7 questions from the Tell Your Life Story Guided Journal. Here we share the stories of people who have lived storied lives. Now, that includes everyone, of course, but today we have Chris on the show. So let's get to know him, shall we? Hello.
Hello.
Hey. How you doing? Do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us what you do.
Name's Chris Fields. Live in suburbs of Ohio. Currently, I've been doing artwork most of my adult life, both professionally and just personally. You know, I've worked as a commercial artist for 25 years. And in the last few years, I've gotten more into the construction side, you know, of things. And so I'm doing estimating work, you know, as a for a construction company. And it's actually really fascinating work. And doing any artwork, you know, any freelance or just any projects that I want to do for myself on the side.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. What type of like what do you have any projects, personal projects that you're working on now? You said you do things on the side.
Yeah. At the moment, you know, I'm doing a bit of housework, you know. Cool. I've been renovating a house that we've lived in for over 10 years now and turning it, you know, into what we want, you know, instead of what we bought. And so, you know, what that takes up a bit of time. I have some things brewing in my head, but nothing that I've actually started. I recently finished up a tabletop actually that was made out of 2x2 strips of Wingay wood.
Oh, and, sure, nice.
You know, turning out to be quite nice.
And, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. You ready for the first question that we have here?
Sure.
What makes you lose track of time because you love doing it so much? This doesn't even have to be work related. This could be truly anything.
Yeah, I would have to say working on a personal project, be it if it's sculpting, painting, drawing, anything like that. Nothing makes the time go without my knowing it, without me doing something like that. I've gotten myself in trouble before quite a few times, you know. Start on something at 10 o'clock at night, and then I look up and it's 3 or 4 in the morning, and I've got to be at work in 3 hours. Yeah. Like, oh, no. Yeah. You know.
Do you have like a favorite piece that you've done? Like piece of art that you've made?
Anything that I finish. You know?
Oh, sure. Oh, my God, I hear that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of weird because when I'm done with them, I'm really just kind of done with them. You know, I have my piece. I get it. I'm done with it. I don't even name things anymore. I don't assign names to it because I'm just there. It is. I made it. It's out in the world. Now everybody else can deal with it. You know.
Oh yeah, no, totally.
I'm done with it. So yeah, I don't really choose favorites.
Sure. It sounds like you don't force inspiration, I guess. It's like if you're doing something and it's like you kind of fall out of like passion or love for it, you're like, okay, I'm good now. You've gotten what you needed out of it, and yeah.
Absolutely. I've tried forcing inspiration before, tried forcing, you know, projects, forcing something, and you can always tell. You know, you can always tell it's not a natural, and you know, I don't like that. You know, maybe other people can't tell, but I can tell. So,
oh yeah, sure.
You know, I wait around for whatever it is, you know, to give me that kick in the butt to, you know, okay, yeah, let's do this.
Have you had something where it's like you stopped working on it and then like years pass and then something hits you and you're like, oh my God, I've got, like, you want to go back to it and you've like revisited it? Or is it often that you have stopped and then it's just, you're just done?
Oh yeah, all the time. I have tons of half-finished projects that I've worked on, just stowed away, you know, in different places around. And every once in a while, I'll come across one. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. And then, you know, because I'll start with them and I'll start with an idea. And then I use up the idea, but the piece isn't finished. And sure. It's like,
yeah,
I got to put that away for a while. And then I come back to it and I'm in a different place mentally and different place. And it's like, oh, yeah, I pick it right back up. And then sometimes I end up finishing it. Sometimes it's an ongoing
thing.
It can go on and on and on. You know, I'm not really sure if any piece is technically ever finished, but it's just when you choose to let go of it.
I mean, hey, listen, there's something in that. You could even say that, like, you have things that are quote unquote like half finished, but when you're done with it, then it's finished. It's like it's done. Like, even though this is like technically half done, I am finished with it, and therefore it is finished.
Yeah,
kind of a cool thing. Do you have like a kind of genre of thing that you're making, of things that you make that are your like favorite things, or like a preferred, you know, theme? I guess.
You know, I do kind of gear towards unsettling images, shapes. Or, you know, things that don't really look like they should work the way that they are. You know, you know, I've got a little end table that I made that's actually acrylic top that I melted to look like flowing fabric. And it's has wooden leg bases, and it's all cantilevered, and it just looks like the thing should just fall to pieces.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty solid. It's, you know, it works pretty well. And it's very, it's kind of strange looking, you know, and all that, but
sure.
Yeah. I tend to like to go towards the things that are, that most people I think would find be a little uneasy.
Yeah. No, I looked on your website and I've seen the things, and I think it was a big, because it was myself and Madeline, who is like the producer, and we were looking for people. And I know that you reached out on Twitter, and he was like, "What do you think about what do you think about Chris? What do you think about this guy?" And then I looked at your kind of the theme. I'm not saying that this is what your things are, but I'm a big horror guy. And I looked, I was like, man, these things have a great feel to it. Like, they're a great vibe. I'm so into this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I also really like the kind of unsettling nature of the some certain things that you make. Question number two, how would you describe your family when you were growing up?
Well, you know, I grew up, you know, in the late 70s and all through the 80s. You know, the things were a little different then, I guess. My parents, that was the first generation where the mothers would go away to work. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, the latchkey kids, if you will. And, in a lot of ways, it was a blast, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you didn't have mom looking over your shoulder all the time, you know. And, you know, when she was home at times, she would just lock the door and be like, come home when it gets dark.
Yeah.
All right. You know, and then there were other times, you know, when back in the 80s, there was the whole satanic panic thing that happened. A lot of my extended family were very religious. And, you know, that dug its fingers into a lot of facets of life, you know, back then. And it wasn't just RPGs, it was music, it was television. There were all kinds of things that it was going after. And I think people got a little too caught up in that idea. And unfortunately my mom was one of them. You know, being a kid thinking, oh, mom's not going to lie. You know, I went along with it for a little while.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I reached the age of reason and said, oh, well, okay, whatever. But, you know, there was that. But then on the other hand, you know, like my dad's biggest focus, I think, for the longest time was music. He just loved music. And he's got the, he still has a giant record collection, and he's, you know, had it all as a kid. And he would let me just sit there and just rifle through them and just check out everything. Cool. And I'd go through, and that's kind of where I was introduced to some of this art, you know. You know, he had like the Molly Hatchet albums that had all the Frank Frazetta, Death Dealer, and you know, all that kind of artwork on it. And, you know, just really cool stuff that would just stand out to me. And I'd just sit there and pull it out, and I'd just stare at these things for like an hour. Just like, wow, what is that? You know, and it would, you know, listen to, you know, a lot of different kinds of music, opened me up to a lot of music that otherwise I probably would not have heard, you know. So, you know, that was very cool.
That is cool. Yeah.
You know, a lot of my family lived around, you know, fairly close to us. So, you know, it was all right. But for the most part, we just kind of stayed at home. And when I was 10, my sister was born, and it was just a little bit more of like, all right, kid, you know, you got to go find something else to do because we got another baby to look after, you know. So,
so you mentioned, you know, Satanic Panic, and you were like, oh, well, it wasn't just like role playing games. And because I know that you make miniatures and things for like tabletop, is that something that you were doing like at the time? Were you playing role playing games, or and then because you know, you said that you also, you obviously, as kids do, believed the believed your mom when she says stuff. Did you fall out of role-playing games and then find it again later? Have you found it again now? Are you like back into them? I know that you make tabletop things, so you probably are.
I'm not back into playing them now. That's, you know, that is a commitment of time that I just can't, I can't justify at the moment, you know. But yeah, back then, I absolutely, by friends, you know, just came over and was like, you got to check this out, man. We got this Dungeons and Dragons game. It's so cool, you know. And, you know, and it wasn't like a typical board game, you know. You got to use your imagination and and just do all this cool stuff. And that led to an old version of Robotech game, because that was big cartoon at the time. I think it was Palladium Books made an old version of that, and we played that for a little while. And then I think it was the 60 Minutes thing that was released where it kind of started the ball rolling on everything, you know, with the role-playing games. And, you know, I would get constant lectures from my mom and, you know, all this. And even my dad finally was like, ah, maybe this stuff's a little too mature for you, you know, right now. Okay, you know. So, you know, now of course I still went over to my friend's house and played, you know, and all that. They just they didn't know about it. But I, you know, when I got into right around high school, it was kind of when I gave all that up. I started discovering music and playing music and things like that, and I didn't get back into even the idea of role playing games until about 22 years ago. And you know, I just discovered all this cool stuff. And, you know, we get, they had a great store here in town, you know, that I went and would check out. And I'm just seeing like how far like the miniature making had come, you know. And, you know, as I still had a lot of my old miniatures that I had as a kid, and I like get these new ones, and I look at the old ones, and I look at the new ones. I'm like, man, this is, it doesn't even compare, you know. This stuff's so great now. And so then I actually started making terrain pieces and stuff to sell, because when I was a kid, I always thought it would be super cool to have just like a big setup, you know, with all these different terrain parts and all this, you know, different sculptural elements and all these things in there. But I really didn't have, you know, access to the knowledge or, you know, the technology or anything to be able to make any of that kind of stuff then. Now, fast forward part of my life, and now I do. So yeah, like, well, maybe I can, maybe I can try this. And nobody was interested at that time. You know, I tried, I tried selling stuff all over the place, and they're like, oh yeah, it looks pretty cool, but I don't know. And it wasn't until just the last couple of years that I finally started getting people, you know, like, hey, maybe could you make this? Could you do this? Like, yeah, sure. You know?
That's cool. That's really, that's dope. What, so with, like, you know, because you said that you would, you know, you used to play and then be like, oh man, it'd be so cool to make these little terrain pieces. What actually got you into, like, sculpture making and making those, maybe not even minis? Was it, like, playing, like, role-playing games got you into, like, the artistry of it? Was it, like, a random happenstance?
You know, I think it was a little more random. You know, when I was a kid, I always drew. And, sure. You know, it was, you know, drawing everything that I could, you know. And coming up, you're learning how to draw on things. And I remember I had an art teacher in sixth grade, I believe. And he helped me make a wooden bridge, a suspension bridge, that was in scale with the minis that I had at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was kind of my introduction to the whole idea of, like, doing things to scale like that. But, you know, like I say, time goes on. You know, I got into music, and then I started working in commercial art, 'cause for a while I was toying with the idea of trying to do comic books and animation, things like that.
Yeah.
And when I got into doing commercial art, they developed a 3D department that I ultimately ended up joining into and learning all kinds of cool stuff from these guys.
Dope. Yeah, that's really cool.
And, you know, the great thing is it translates from large scale to small scale and without a whole lot of compromise. So... You know, so it just ended up being a natural fit. So when I rediscovered role-playing games, you know, that they were so popular again and all that, I was like, hey, you know, I have the know-how now. I can actually make some of this stuff and let's see what it does. And, you know.
Cool. Love that. You're also clearly, you're big into music. We've mentioned it several times. You're wearing a Napalm Death shirt. And how big of a role has music played in, I mean, generally, I guess, your life, but also maybe in the things that you've made? Have you ever joined a band? Do you know instruments? Have you ever thought about doing music as, like, a big part of your life?
When I was 16, well, when I was 15, I started learning how to play guitar. And when I was 16, I actually joined a band. Well, me and my friends put together a band, you know, that we thought we were great, you know. And you know, one of our friends' older sister thought we were pretty good, too, for some reason. And she decided to try and manage us and, like, was booking us gigs here and there, and actually almost got us signed to a jazz label. And they were going to have us tour up and down the East Coast, you know, or whatever. And we're like 16 years old, you know. We're like, holy cow, this was easy, you know. You know, the funny thing was, we were awful. You know, we were just terrible. And I don't know. I really don't think anything would have come
to
it.
But then you almost got signed. You almost got signed and you had people who liked you.
Yeah, you know, that's just the funniest thing. You have people that'll back you. You know, anything can happen, I guess. But, you know, once that fell apart, I kept pursuing music because I really thought music was going to be the thing that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I thought that was going to be my creative outlet. You know, that was going to be the output that I was going to give to the world was, you know, some music of some way, some sort. And for the longest time, it was, you know, the heavy music, really, you know.
It
got heavier and heavier, and then one day my mind just opened up to all different kinds, you know, different stuff. I just started listening to different kinds of music and was like, you know, I actually like that too. And started, you know, going around and just listening to all different kinds of stuff. So my musical interest and the kind of music I wanted to play and all that changed, and it became harder and harder to find anybody who was really interested in being doing something a little bit offbeat, you know, around here. most of the people that I've ever met that did music, you know, everything had to be regimented. Everything had to be structured. Everything had to be done just so, just this way. And I don't know, I was a little bit more of, you know, let's kind of just get together and see what happens. See what, you know, see what sounds right. And I found a group of guys that we did that, and actually was going quite well, I thought. And, you know, I'm thinking, okay, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the good, you know, springboard that we're going to need. And then come to find out the guy that was playing bass with us was just, is just his screw around time until, you know, for the summer until his big job started. I was just like, oh, and that kind of, I don't know, that kind of just crushed that whole spirit, you know, of music for me. And I played in a couple of other bands after that, and it, my heart just wasn't into it anymore, you know? And so I was like, you know what? I feel like I'm wasting other people's time, not just my own. I don't want to waste anybody's time ever again doing this, because I really don't like it that much anymore, you know, as far as playing. Now, listening to music, it's, you know, that's a different story. You know, I always, always want to have music in my life. You know, it was a big part, like I said, it was a big part of growing up. My dad, you know, always wanted music. He always wanted to share music with me. And, you know, just the continuous discovery of different kinds of music that's out there, you know, because there's so much stuff's been recorded over the last 150 years. I mean, that's, it's just amazing, you know, and to keep finding things that you've never heard of that, it's like, wow, that really resonates with me. You know, I really like that. It's just, it's awesome. You know,
I love it. Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, nowadays when anyone can make music, there's like thousands of new songs being posted everywhere and like three new genres a month that's coming out. have you always remained in the same area, like Ohio, in your life? Because you... because you were just talking about how it was hard to find people who you wanted to play music with in your area. Have you just kind of, have you always been in Ohio in like the same zone?
Yeah, most of my life. I mean, I was born out west. I was born in Tacoma, Washington. But that my dad was in the Air Force and he was stationed out there.
Ah, and, very good,
My mom wanted to come back here to be close with her family. And, you know, my dad's family wasn't too terribly far from here. So they decided to move out here when I was still very young. And we'd stayed here ever since. There were a couple of close calls with me maybe moving somewhere else, but it just never developed into anything. So, yeah, you know, there's never been a shortage of musicians around here. But musicians who were willing to experiment or try and do something is hard, you know?
I get you. Right. Moving on to the third question. I had a lot of questions to ask you there. I was excited to hear about your life. So question number three here. Who was the first person in your life who truly understood you and made you feel like you didn't have to explain or justify yourself? This is a big one. This is a big deep one.
I feel like that would have been a guy who ended up mentoring me in sculpting and mold making. His name was Ross Smith. And I would have met him, I would have been 24, 25 years old, somewhere around there when I first met him. At that point, I was still approaching life at a very superficial level. And I was getting ready, you know, as I was right on the edge of stripping all that away and, you know, not being that. Well, he was somebody, he had already been through that. And I think he could see, you know, what was happening with me, and he understood. So he never asked, never judged, never anything. He was, you know, I could ask him any question about how to do anything, and he always took the time. He would always sit down and take the time, and, you know, he didn't do it mockingly. He didn't do it, you know, because there were some things. I never went to college for art. You know, I never went to college for that. But working where I worked, especially when the company first starting up, they were getting guys straight out of college, straight out of art school. Columbus College of Art and Design is here. And they would come in and some of these people, you know, they were nice, but they would have a real attitude about trying to pass on knowledge, you know, to somebody who didn't pay as much money as they did to go get it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever the reason. I just shouldn't just pigeonhole everybody into that. But whatever the reason was. And he was never like that. You know, he was always so willing to share his knowledge without judgment, without, you know, asking me, you know, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? You know, whatever. It was just, hey, you know. you know, yeah, and like I said, never had to explain myself to him.
That's cute. How did you meet him?
We met at that job. You know, he was brought on. They, at one point in New York City, they have a McDonald's that's like two or three stories tall, or they had a McDonald's. And they wanted to make a giant scale model of New York City to go inside of the McDonald's.
With,
you know, and they had like a big Ronald McDonald float that they wanted going down in there. Well, he was one of the model guys that they brought in to do that. And I got to be in the same building while they were, you know, creating that. So that's kind of where I got to meet him. I was not working on that. I was doing other things for the company at the time, but you know, I got to see this, like, holy cow, this guy's a talented dude, you know, he can do all kinds of stuff. What is that? And so I just started inquiring about things, and he was just so happy to talk about it, and just, you know, any knowledge that he had that he could share, he did, you know. It was just so cool. Unfortunately, he ended up passing away suddenly. He was 36 years old and fell over of a heart attack. He fell over dead of a heart attack. Jesus. You know. Yeah. So the short time I got to know him was great.
Yeah. I'm so fascinated by this scale model of New York in this giant McDonald's now. Oh. I've started furiously Googling it. That's so interesting. That's so weird.
I don't know if it's still there or not. You know, one of the guys, when he was installing it, he was in there. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning, and he's trying to put up one of these buildings, and some drunk lady came in and vomited all over it. And he apparently he just lost it. He just went completely banana ape shit on this guy, on this lady.
Yeah.
And you know, because you can imagine they worked on this thing for months and months and months.
And it's a miniature model. You can't wash it.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Yeah, they've got all this grass flocking and everything down in there and all. Oh, man. So.
All right. So, what period of your life do you think shaped you the most, and how did it change you? From what we've been talking about, you have a lot of like lives you've lived. We got, you know, sculptures, and then now we're in construction. We had the, you know, miniatures, music, and musicians that we've hit several times. What period of your life do you think is the big one?
I think I touched on it just a little bit ago. You know, when I was first getting into the music and doing all of that, I, in a lot of ways, was on a very superficial level. It was all about, you know, you got to look the part, you got to be, you know, this and that.
Yeah.
And you know, that carried over when I first started doing art as well. You know, it was kind of, you know, artists have to, you know, be funky. Artists have to look the part. Artists have to be this. Artists have to do that. You know, I had green dreadlocks and a purple beard. And, you know, I mean, you know, whatever. Yeah. I mean, that's all fine. But it was so unsatisfying, you know, over the long run. It was just like, oh, what? You know, this isn't doing anything for me, you know, and what I'm interested in doing is learning how to make. I want to learn how to make whatever I want to make, you know, and I don't want to sit here and twiddle my hair, you know, I don't want to worry about that stuff. That's not, you know, it grew to be not important to me. And I, moved into an apartment, mid-rise apartment building, and threw away my TV, and all I had was music. Yeah, all I had was music and canvas and paper and sculpting tools and clay. And I shaved my head, shaved my beard off, and I got to work, you know.
Damn, huge.
And I think that was probably the beginning of the really formative time.
How old were you when you did that?
I think I was somewhere around 25 when I started doing that. Somewhere 25, 26, something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because, you know, to go on top, you know, with all that too, I was going out with my, you know, buddies all the time. We're going out to bars like every night. And, you know, just, you know, which that let a young person do that, whatever. You know, but it gets to a point where it's just not satisfying, and I'm not accomplishing anything at all except you know, getting a hangover and pissing off my boss at work. You know, so you know, so getting in and being by myself and stripping myself of all of that superficiality and. You know, actually becoming me, I think that was probably, you know, the most important formidable time of my life that, you know, really shaped who I've become now.
Yeah, so. No, it must be. No, I love that. That's a great story. Okay, I have to ask this because we talked about music so much. You got like a favorite album? Have you got something that is like, it doesn't matter how many times you go back to it, you just have to listen to it like front to back?
Probably the only one that I can think of right off the top of my head right now is Faith No More, King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime. The first time so when I first heard Faith No More, I didn't like them. You know, whatever. Red Hot Chili Peppers ripoff, whatever, you know. And, you know, it just didn't do any a whole lot for me. And, you know, then the other music they released, I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. But then somebody played that album for me, and it just blew me away. And ever since then, I have to listen to it, like, at least once a month, you know, front to back.
Yeah, sure. Everything. Oh, love that. Did you find them in the like their initial active years, the one that went into the 90s, or did you re-find them or find them in the like 2000 to nowadays like actives?
Well, I first heard them when they came out, and I think it was 1990 when Epic came out. Now, I know they had We Care a Lot before that. But, you know, back in the MTV days, that's where you got to be introduced to a lot of music.
Oh, and, yeah. It was the pastime in my house. I would just sit in the front room and doodle. And, yeah, my mom would put on MTV and I would just watch that all day. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I remember they came on and it was, you know, this isn't Slayer, you know, or whatever, you know, whatever stupid attitude I had at the time. And I just didn't pay attention to them for a little while. And I'm trying to remember what year that album actually came out. It was like 94 or 95, maybe.
Yeah.
It wasn't too long after that album came out that I heard it. So it had only been out for, you know, at most 6 months. And then I'd heard it and it was just like, wow, you know, this is... Wow, it's amazing, you know. And ever since then, Mike Patton has been one of my favorite vocalists, you know. Mm-hmm. And just the chemistry those guys have is, you know, so good. And, you know, I don't know that they're ever going to make music again, which is a shame, but, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Whatever.
But they made that one, that, like, perfect album for you, so it's like, it's fine. You guys can stop.
Yeah. Yeah. They can go be old and go sit in their recliners now. That's fine.
Was that a big influence on you when you were being a musician? Like, did you want to make, like... Were you doing your active, like, pursuing music before or after that album? Or during, when that album came out?
it started well before that, mm-hmm. and was during that album and a little bit afterwards.
Sure.
You know, it was, I think I probably gave up music around the year 2000.
Okay,
I think, so, trying to get a timeline here, it may have been 1989 to 1990 to about 2000 was the kind of the big time period for me.
That's a solid, chunk of time, really giving it a go. Yeah.
When we were first starting out, we thought we were making like really heavy music, and we were, you know. and, you know, as things progressed, you know, things like that Faith No More and stuff like that, like really influenced what, you know, I was kind of interested in doing something that's a little offbeat, a little different, you know, that's not just a straightforward, whatever, but
love it. No, that's great. I love it. I actually haven't listened to that album, but like I'm looking at the like related artists and I'm like, oh yeah, these are all people that I was like into. I will listen to that and then I will email you and I'll be like, yeah, this is a good album. Before I get too whisked away in questions, I have something for my dear listeners to marinate on. Recipes. Family recipes, to be exact. We ask all these questions about people, but what about questioning food? Maybe I just have the holidays on my mind, but I also want to know what my dad puts in his bread and butter pudding recipe. I know that is so British, and it doesn't sound good. It is so delicious. It is one of my favorite things that he makes, and I don't know how he makes it, but great news. In addition to Tell Your Life Story and other fantastic guided journals we have Hear Your Story recipe journals. These are books where they are places for family recipes as well as the stories connected to them. That way, when you pass down a soup recipe, you pass down a whole lot more. Check out Mum, I Want to Learn Your Recipes and More Recipe Journals on our website, in stores, and on Amazon. Back to it. Here are more questions with Chris. All right, question 5. What is the question that you're afraid to ask yourself? This is when we start getting deep.
I think the biggest question, and I was actually confronted with it a couple of years ago, was, did I waste my life working so long in the commercial art? So working in that kind of field, working specifically commercial art, you know, and I don't know if you know what that really entails. It's providing a lot of retail companies and stuff with their decor packages for when they're renovating or, you know, all kinds of stuff. And for quite some time there, a lot of American retailers, restaurants, things like that were getting a lot of different custom items that, you know, would be molded and cast and painted, and they'd have knockoff paintings of something except done in their style, put on, you know, put in. And I don't, if you've ever seen a Red Robin restaurant.
I haven't.
Okay. There's Red Robin restaurants, and one of their things is a mascot of a bird. It's a big red bird giving a thumbs up.
Yeah.
And I probably painted 80% of those that are standing in the restaurants.
Whoa.
You know?
Whoa.
And it's all cool. It all sounds cool, but it really doesn't do anything to prepare you for what's going to come after.
Okay, and yeah, sure.
When you're in it, you're kind of convinced that this is it. There is no after. There's not going to be another anything else going on. This is what I'm, you know, good at doing. This is what I'm going to do. And then everything falls apart and these jobs go away, or something like COVID happens. And the job goes away.
Yep.
And I have to make a decision. Do I want to keep following the same people around town to all these different companies, to all these barely established companies, and work there for a little while until either they decide, ah, let's get this old guy out of here, or they just completely collapse, you know, which happens constantly, you know, in that industry now. Yeah. And, or do I want to try and pave my way going somewhere else? You know, mm-hmm. do I have it in me to reinvent myself? Mm. And it was getting a little hairy, you know, it was getting a little hard, you know, when you're not getting phone calls, you're not being taken seriously by anybody, you know. And I actually sat and I told my wife one day, I was like, I'm afraid that I wasted my life on that company, you know. Mm. And it's a shame because I learned a lot from them, you know. It's not, yeah. I'm not trying to knock them, you know, but probably the lifespan I should have stayed in a business like that was 5 years. You know, sure. You really can't get any more out of them. You know, you're not going to get retirement from a place like that. Not real retirement. You're not going to be able to move up in a position to where you're actually, you know, somebody there, because it's very insular and they keep things a certain way because, you know, I don't know what kind of shady business practices they had going on behind closed doors, you know, and I'll never know, but something was happening, you know, something was working for somebody. And those, you know, the kind of trade that you learn there isn't necessarily transferable to the rest of the world. You know, what can I do?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I can sculpt a big giant thing out of foam. Hey, let me come work at your accounting firm. You know, like it doesn't really work, you know?
Yeah. Sure.
Now the last few years that I worked there, I started doing estimating work for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a need and I knew the 3D stuff in and out, and they were having a lot of trouble figuring out how to price that stuff and make it profitable. So I stepped into that role to help them out with that and learned quite a bit about estimating. So that was, you know, a good thing because that's what I ended up moving on doing. And these guys at a company that was called Allsteel gave me a chance and they brought me in, and, you know, it was great. And it kind of opened my eyes also to, there are people out there that are wanting to do business a better way, you know, and, you know, unfortunately things didn't work out with Allsteel, but then I'm currently working for a company called Lehman Damon, and it's amazing because they're the same way. They're interested in building people, you know?
Oh, love that. Sure.
And, are not interested in tearing people down, you know, and it's quite, you know, quite eye opening, and it's quite refreshing, and I'm feel just totally grateful that I've found this place and they gave me an opportunity, you know,
because
I was there for a minute, like really thinking like, oh man, this is, you know,
sure, yeah,
I stuck around too long.
Did you find an answer to that question, like, in yourself? Do you think that you wasted time? Because I admittedly, I don't know the whole story, but I mean, if you learn stuff from it, if you're able to, like, you know, if you're able to get living and life out of it, you know, you were paid and you were able to, like, live in a place and get, I don't know if you got, like, big friends from there, but if you learned stuff, definitely, like, that's great. Do you think that you did actually waste it?
You know, it depends on what perspective you want to look at it from.
Sure.
When we were sitting in the middle of it, it was, you know, at times, it was so inspiring to work for these people. It was like, oh my God, this is, you know, these guys, I'll run through a wall for these guys. It's amazing. And then a lot of the time, it was like I was watching somebody jam feces up their own asshole with a stick. You know, it was just like, it's like, what's going on here? What are we doing? You know? And, well, I'm already here. Might as well see what happens. You know? there were things that didn't make any sense that were a complete waste of time, energy, and sucked a lot of life out of a lot of people. Not just me. It wasn't just me, you know?
Sure.
And, but I did meet a lot of really great people, just some of the most creative people, you know.
Love that. Yeah.
I met my wife there. You know, that was...
Love that. Was yeah, perfect.
All, you know, so much good came from the place. You know, I can't just sit here and say it was everything was awful. But when it came down to it's time for what's next, it really didn't help with that.
Sure.
You know.
Okay.
And
yeah,
when you're in, you know, at a certain point in life, when you're faced with having to start over, it's, you know, that it's a little difficult, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it worked out. Everything worked out. So I'm not, you know, I'm not in the, you know, ring of complaining about it.
Yeah,
I'm not mad. They gave me an opportunity. They didn't have to do that. They kept me on for a quarter of a century. You know, they didn't have to do that.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, they were never, I never had a paycheck bounce. I never had a paycheck that was late, you know, like, there's plenty of good, you know, to be brought from that. But there's also just some of the most ridiculous stuff happened there that just, it's another thing. I can't even tell stories to people I work with because they won't believe me. You know, it's just like, I can't tell you about this stuff, man. I, you know, you're going to sit here and think I'm just making up stories, man.
Do you have a story? Do you have a wild story that you can share, or are you not able to share any of them?
Oh, God, I've got all kinds of stories. So I shared an office with one guy for 10 years. You know, last 10 years we were there when I was doing estimating. And I think he got this from The Sopranos, where he always had to have somebody in his sights. Okay, he ran the estimating division. And when I started down there, there were six people that worked. We worked in the basement of this building, and there were six of us down there. And one by one, people just started disappearing, and it was because of him. And I'm like, interesting. You know, like they'd lose their jobs or they'd lose their spot. They'd have to get moved to a different place.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And I started picking up on this little game. I'm like, oh, this dude's just, he's just playing games with these people. And, you know, it got down to where it was just me and him. And he started putting his crosshairs on people in project management, account management, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, he'd come up with funny little names for him. One kid, poor kid, he nicknamed him Ziggy, you know, and I don't know what that was all about, but you know,
like Stardust, like David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust.
Either that or the little cartoon, you know, from the Sunday cartoon.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but, you know, he picked on Ziggy until Ziggy quit and left. And then I started noticing he was doing weird stuff when I was down there. Now, he had on his desk, he had one of those like bellhop bells, you know, that you ding.
Uh-huh.
And he disassembled it, turned the bell upside down, put all the guts inside of that bell. Now, that base is like, you know, that's cast metal. That's really hard stuff.
Yeah.
He would sit there with that bell upside down and he would just bang it on that damn base for hours. Hours on end, and he'd just be staring at his computer screen banging on this thing, and I'm just like, all right. And he had next to it, he had a stack of poker chips, and they were like real poker chips from a casino. They weren't like little plastic Milton Bradley things. And he'd sit there and he'd
work
just...
in like a place in Twin Peaks.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying, you know. And he would sit there and he would just shuffle these damn poker chips, and I knew what he was doing. He was trying to get me to complain about it. He was trying to get me to tell him, dude, knock it off so that he could go complain to somebody and get me kicked out of there. Well, I refused to do it. I would not do it. I put up with that shit until he went on vacation. And then I took all of his poker chips and I glued them together. So it was one great big block of poker chips. And I, you know, he came back from vacation. He didn't say anything. He stopped banging the bell on his desk. And, you know, one day one of his little buddies came down and she grabbed the poker chips. She wanted to do the thing and picked up a whole big thing of chip and it just fell right on his desk. And she was like, oh my God, what is that? And, you know, he went on a big rant about, if I ever find out who did that, blah, 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 blah. You know, he knew who did it. He knew why I did it. I knew why he was doing what he was doing, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's a little peek into kind of what the kind of nonsense you'd have to deal with. You know, these people were insane at times, you know, I mean, some of these guys, they were the nicest, greatest creative people, but then they could just turn into a chaos demon, you know, and just, you're just like, what the hell's wrong with you, man? I'm just trying to get through a work day, you know?
Mad. Oh, that's wild. Love it. Okay. All right. That's enough of me being excited. We'll get back to the questions. okay, if you could ensure that your life and work would accomplish just one thing, what would that thing be? This could be any work. This could be like professional. This could be your personal work.
For me, I think it would be just an awareness that there is so much out there to enjoy that you should not limit yourself to just one idea, one concept, you know, one rule of how to be, how to go about your life, how to exist. There's, you know, it's just such a mixed bag out there. There's so much great stuff out there to be had, to be enjoyed. You know, and for all I know, we get one go around on this dust ball. So we should enjoy it all as much as possible.
Yeah, you know. I love that. That's grand. You know, when talking about things that you like, love and enjoy, you know, obviously music is a big one. I saw that you have a Dalek mug. Do you, you also like, you know, loved comics and wanted to like, was thinking about getting into them. When it, you know, when it comes to what you just said about enjoying many, many things, do you have like, you know, like, TV and movies and or books or whatever, is there like a secondary love that you have for another medium, or is it like mainly music that you put yourself into, mainly like sculpture, art and miniatures and things like that?
Oh, I have quite a few, actually. I love television. You mentioned Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
David Lynch, period. It's not just Twin Peaks, anything David Lynch.
Oh, anything. Yeah. Just, no, absolutely.
You know, is on the highest pedestal for me. You know, I like all different kinds of movies, you know. Comic books, even though the comic books that I got into are kind of a little more off the beaten path, like, you know, Simon Bisley and things like that. Sam Keith.
Sure.
You know, as well as I, you know, there's some run of the mill stuff that I kind of like, but, you know, I think the last big comic thing that I was into was Gideon Falls.
I know Gideon Falls.
Yeah, that was quite well done. I really like that.
Yeah, because I have a big comic book phase. One of my favorite stories, full stop, ever is from a comic series called Saga. And if you know Saga, I had a big phase where it's like before like the Walking Dead TV show. I was a teenager, big into zombies. I got super into that series, and then I got into Saga and all that. So I like talking comics. That's fun. I've heard of Gideon Falls, but I've not actually looked into it. I can see that it's a horror, and that's immediately right up my alley.
And it's you know, an overused term, Lynchian, in its own right. You know,
sure, yeah, yeah, of course. No, love that. Awesome,
and,
great.
You know, shows. I love Mr. Robot. You know, that's one of my favorite shows that's come out in the last 10 years or so.
Sure. Big sci-fi guy? You a sci-fi guy? Did you say that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. You know, I like a lot of the Star Wars stuff that's been made, you know, I'm willing to give a pass to some of the things that people complain the most about because, you know, whatever. But, you know, I just watched this past weekend a documentary on the making of Jaws.
Oh, which sure.
Was so good. you know. Yeah. And that movie, that's one of those perfect movies that just, you know, shouldn't ever be attempted to be remade. And you know, absolutely. It's still frightening, and
it's one of the worst things about me. It's such a hole in my media knowledge. I haven't seen it. Really? I haven't seen Jaws, and I don't know why. Like, everything from that era, like, mm-hmm. I devour. For some reason, I have yet to see Jaws, and I do need to change it. Yeah. Also, sci-fi guy. I'm going to be excited about Saga for a second. So, it's a sci-fi comic series. There are these, like, it's like there is a planet and there is a moon. The moon is all, like, fantasy-based, and the planet is all sci-fi based, and it's a war between them, and it's two people, one from each faction, that like fly away and have a kid, and it's everyone is hunting them. It's a big taboo thing. Very kind of Game of Thrones. There is a lot of different perspectives, and there is no real good guys in it. One of the lead villains, which is one of my favorite characters, is a robot that just has like a big CRT monitor for a head, and he's the worst person to ever live, and I love him so deeply. if you like comics, I would, because you've given me two things that I'm gonna check out now, and now I'm I need to recommend something to you. I feel
okay. Saga,
it's really very good. Saga, it's really really good.
Is it finished or is it ongoing?
So it's ongoing still. They had like a 2-year hiatus, which unfortunately, there was a character death before the 2-year hiatus that affected me so into my core that I can't keep reading it, because I get so upset the fact that my guy is not in it anymore. So I have yet to pick it up, but it's like, it's so weird. We mentioned Lynchian. Such a weird series. Like, the alien design and the things in it is super bizarre, really unique. I love it to absolute pieces. Really cool. Good. If you're ever like in a comic book shop and you see it, like, I would super recommend picking up the first one, because you may hate it, but you might like it. From what we've talked about, it seems like we have a very similar taste in media, and so I'm like, hey, maybe you should check it out.
Cool. I think I will.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Final question. What question do you wish someone would ask you about your life? And I'm going to say the spoiler alert, I am going to ask you it after. So, yeah, when you think about it.
What do I wish someone had asked me about my life? That's a tough one, because I'm pretty, actually, closed off, you know, from a lot of conversation. And when people ask me a lot of personal questions, I start to kind of clam up a little bit.
This is interesting, because you've been we've talked a lot, and you've been really open, seemingly, to me so far. During our combos.
I don't know. Sometimes it works. I get it. Sometimes it doesn't.
No, I understand.
Maybe had things turned out differently with music, how far would I have pursued it?
How far would you have pursued it?
As far as I would have been allowed to take it.
Yeah. Let's do like dream perfect world. What do you think you would have gone into in music? Do you think you would have like decided to go producer route? Did you like the performing? Would you have helped other people like get to studios and things like that?
You know, the thing that I probably enjoyed the absolute most was the recording process. And
love that.
Around here, there was it may still be there. It was a multimedia college in, I think, Circleville. And they had a full-on recording studio. And they offered 8 hours of free recording time for anyone who wanted to book it, so that they could have students actually working on, you know, mixing and learning all this stuff. Well, the one band that I was really clicking with, we decided to take out an 8-hour block there, and you know, we showed up, and like I said, most people, everything's very regimented, everything's very 1, 2, 3 every whatever. We were doing all kinds of weird stuff. I had these big cardboard sonnet tubes that I put at one end of an amplifier and a microphone all the way at the other end, and was playing through that, and you know, it was experimenting, just doing fun stuff like that, you know, even the guys at the engineering that place that see so much stuff, they were so bored over it. They were getting excited. They're just like, yeah, man, this is cool. Let's try this. You know, let's try that. Mm-hmm. And so much so, they actually, a few months later, called me up and was like, hey, do you guys want to come record again? Because we got a whole new batch of kids. Like, ah, we're not playing together anymore. You know, but I probably would have explored going into that kind of recording engineering, you know, sure. or doing, you know, working in a recording studio would probably cool. have been my final landing spot.
Yeah. Has there ever been like, you know, with working in construction and especially doing all art, has there ever been a moment where you're like, you could make a studio, and then you could kind of get people in to come and help them record and get all these young artists? Or is that a thing where you're like, you don't really have that much passion or for that thing? Like, if it was there, you'd love to do it, but
yeah, I'm so far removed from that now.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that I honestly don't even know what kind of gear and equipment would be
sure, you know, yeah.
would be there and how to even start running it.
Yeah, is,
you know,
yeah,
it, yeah. I'd have to relearn everything again, and I just don't have that in me.
No, I get you. I understand. Yeah. Well, it's been an absolute honor talking with you, pal. Well,
thank you so much for having me.
Had a really nice time. No, please. It's been a great honor. I've had a great time just talking about just getting recommended a bunch of different things. I love that. So if anyone who's listening, if they were like, oh, I want to know more about Chris, mm-hmm. where would you send them?
You can see work that I've done on my website, 513studios.com. Mm-hmm. Or if you type in 513 studios on most of the major social media platforms, I should come up.
Love that.
everything, it's mostly just about the artwork that I make. You know, I don't go off on political rants. I don't go off on this and that. Yeah. I steer clear of all that. It's just about, you know, sharing art and,
yeah,
you know, keeping things more positive, you mm-hmm. know, not adding to the negative cesspool of, you know, what can be out there. So
I love it. That's great. Oh, I've had a great time talking, pal. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you.
Yeah, as well. Thank you.
This podcast was possible due to listeners like you, the inspiration and funds of Hear Your Story, and our amazing team. Our producer, Madeline Mason, our social media video and transcription editor, AJ Ray, our video editor, Adrian Parker, our copywriter, Parker Robbins, our post-production supervisor and graphic designer, Abby Kelly, our creative art director, Chelsea Jewell, and myself, Robin Ekberg, as your host and audio editor. Thank you so much for joining us, and remember to share your story.